Okay, so welcome to part two of our discussion with Alan Hess. Alan is an author. He's an architectural historian, lecturer, focusing on mid-century modern architecture primarily in Southern California. In this segment, we're going to focus on desert modernism, primarily the architecture in Palm Springs. We're going to talk about the major players in the mid-century era, the buildings that they did, and what kind of influence they left on the history of Palm Springs. Let's jump right into it. Alan, thanks for sticking with us. On this segment, I want to jump specifically into the desert modernists, and I kind of want to just start right off by setting the stage for modernism and the kind of spirit in Palm Springs. How did modernism come to Palm Springs, and what did it look like at that time?
Palm Springs developed in the mid-20th century a really unique approach to modern architecture. And building a wide variety of types of buildings, using modern concepts, logic, materials. The thing is, though, that it was almost completely ignored until about 2000 or so. Mm-hmm. It was a small enclave. It was known for its Hollywood glamour and, of course, you know, vacationing and tennis and golf and all of that. But very few people realized that it had this architectural heritage until about 2000, and then it just exploded because it was really kind of a time capsule of mid-century modern architecture. Now, why? Well, because going back to the 1920s, but especially after World War II, it was a place which had wealth, and so there were clients who were able to build houses. After World War II, it began to grow, so there was a need for schools and churches and stores and gas stations. And because there was this small group, just a handful of modern architects who had immigrated there, there was this talent that was able to provide all of those types of buildings for the modern city. So all these architects had arrived there, and they really represented a remarkable variety of ideas. You had certainly Richard Neutra, and after World War II, he builds the Edgar Kaufman House, which is one of the best known modern houses in the world. It was extraordinary, a steel and glass house. And of course, Edgar Kaufman, the client, was one of the great patrons of modernism. He had also hired Frank Lloyd Wright to design Falling Water, right, his other vacation home in Pennsylvania. An extraordinary man. But then there was also on the other side of the spectrum, John Lautner, who builds a number of houses, a motel there. The Elrod House is probably his best known. That appeared in the James Bond movie, Diamonds Are Forever, the famous scene where Bambi and Thumper thump James Bond. Right. They all end up in the pool. But it was not steel and glass. It was concrete and glass and buried in the earth. Very organic, very much related in its shapes and materials to nature. So you have those two contrasts that Palm Springs supported. But then also there were people like Donald Wexler, who had actually worked for Richard Neutra before he moved to Palm Springs, and kept up this idea of the simplicity of wood post and beam construction, but then also steel houses. But he took it a step further because he created a series of mass-produced prefabricated steel houses in the early 1960s. So there's you get that idea going on. And then you have somebody like William Cody, who frankly is one of my favorite of the Palm Springs architects, who worked in many different materials, in concrete, in steel. Some of his buildings are just so refined and just distilled down to the absolute essence of the structure. But then he also designed St. Teresa's Church, which are these beautiful organic concrete forms, which create their own enclave, where the interior of the church is actually sitting in what feels like a garden as well. So always in Palm Springs is this relationship of indoors and outdoors to take advantage of the gorgeous climate and the gorgeous views as well. Another great Palm Springs architect was E. Stuart Williams as well. Interesting because, Neutra was from Austria, mid and southern Europe. Stuart Williams toured northern Europe, the Scandinavian countries, and became fascinated by people like Alvar Aalto and their interpretation of modernism, which was actually more organic, using wood and other natural materials. Not so minimalist and stark, perhaps, as the Neutra examples, but warmer. So here, again, another very talented architect working in Palm Springs. You also have Albert Frey, of course. Again, Swiss born, worked for Le Corbusier, always wanted to move to America because it meant the future, the industrial future. And so he comes to Palm Springs in the 1930s and has a long career, 60-some years. He lived into his 90s, in the 1990s, and designs, again, schools and churches, and especially a gas station, which is still there. It's the visitor center on the north side of town, and it is this wonderful hyperparabolic roof line stretching out over what were the gas tanks themselves. And just a wonderful marker. And it's an urban design. It marks the gateway to Palm Springs, basically, and all of its wonderful modern architecture. So it is one of the great buildings of Palm Springs. Fortunately, also, it was preserved. In some ways, it was one of the ways that the interest in Palm Springs was developed around 2000. It was going to be torn down for a shopping center. But local activists got together, saved it. It became an art gallery and then the visitor center. But what would Palm Springs be today without Albert Frey's gas station at the entry to town?
It's an icon.
It is. Yeah. It is. It says everything you need to know about Palm Springs.
Yeah, the vein, though, of architecture's integration with nature, I think, runs consistent through many, almost all of the architects, right? Whether in the Elrod House, where John Lautner kind of cuts the glass to integrate into the rocks, Frey does the same thing on his personal home. And then even on the Cree House, where Frey uses a lot of the industrial materials, but then he, stacks site walls and stacks the fireplace with the local stone there. It was, pretty brilliant. It produces beautiful results.
Yeah. And again, this is one aspect that makes the connection of the history of Palm Springs to architecture today, especially this concern about the climate, about how do you deal with the sun, how do you deal with extremes of hot and cold through architecture. And many of these buildings are designed to be passive solar designs. And this, again, is going back 50, 60, 70 years.
Sure.
And that's an issue, of course, which we're facing today.
Right.
And so there are lessons there that architects today can use to solve the problems of today.
Yeah, they were definitely thinking about climate. And even in Neutra's, Kaufman House is a perfect example, too. Not a passive strategy, but the way he heats the exterior pool deck, puts the, radiant heating in the exterior pool deck, although I believe that never actually worked. The intention was there, right, to try to, blur the boundary between the indoors and outdoors and combine nature with the interior of the space.
Yeah. And again, that's the thing. Combining nature with the architecture, with the daily life and comfort and pleasure of the clients.
Right, right. So, Alan, can you kind of talk to us about, you know, William Kreisel and his strategy of mass-produced housing in Palm Springs?
Well, this is another of the aspects where architects today can learn from Palm Springs, because Palm Springs isn't just these magnificent, luxurious, expensive houses like the Kaufman House or the Elrod House. Mm-hmm. But there was also demand for mass-produced housing as Palm Springs grew in the 1950s and 60s. And one of the architects that really treated that challenge creatively was William Kreisel of Palmer and Kreisel Architects. They had already been designing mass-produced tract housing in Los Angeles. But then one of their clients, Bob and George Alexander, wanted to create mass-produced tracts in Palm Springs. Mm-hmm. Now, the idea of mass production is that you make houses more affordable because you're repeating the same materials, the same plans. You're cutting the cost of an individual unit because you're building so many of them at one time. And Bill Kreisel really was intrigued by that idea. He was a modernist. He went to USC. He was a modernist and devoted all through his life to the concepts of modernism. But he was able to take the mechanics of modernism, the technology of mass production, mm-hmm. and how do you use those not only to bring the price down, but also to make them modern.
Sure.
So you would have many of his houses out there have, you know, butterfly roof lines, for example, which bring in clear story light from above to balance light in the living room or the bedrooms and so forth. Again, he's always thinking about the architecture, the experience of the client residing in this house, and using modern materials and textures and technology to achieve that.
You know, a thought came to mind with, you know, I know A. Quincy Jones designed for Eichler, obviously. Did Kreisel ever design for Eichler at all? I feel like the kind of thought process is very similar.
Yeah. No, Kreisel didn't ever design anything for Eichler. Mm-hmm. But you have to remember and put this whole history together. Today, we do think, of course, of the Eichler subdivisions in Northern California and here in Southern California. Mm-hmm. Joseph Eichler, the builder, not the architect.
Right.
But this idea of bringing good modern design to mass-produced tract housing, which, of course, was exploding all over the United States.
Sure.
In the 50s and 60s. There's such a huge demand for affordable, decent housing of that sort. So Eichler kind of gets a lot of the attention, but there were these other architects and developers who were doing the same thing. George and Bob Alexander were builders who were working with Bill Kreisel at the same time. So as we get into this history, we're realizing that there was a lot more of that modern housing being built, certainly here in Southern California.
Now, wasn't that the original intention of the Case Study House program, too, is to make these modern houses somewhat available to or affordable to the masses?
Yes, that was. The Case Study House Arts and Architecture magazine, which did that today. Those houses sell for millions of dollars.
Right.
Didn't quite achieve the goal of affordable housing for the masses.
Sure.
And which is why we should pay attention to especially people like Bill Kreisel, because he designed a lot of tracts right here in Orange County as well, with many of these same ideas. Mm. And so, you know, modernism isn't just for the wealthy. The whole idea of modernism was to bring the advantages of mass production in the 20th century to improve the lives of the average person, of, you know, factory workers and nurses and just average people. Mm-hmm. And this was one way that Kreisel and developers like the Alexanders did that.
You know, I know that in Neutra's autobiography, he kind of had a similar perspective on it. He's also known for designing large homes, super expensive. But I think also he, in his autobiography, stated that he liked to design with simple materials. And I spoke with Raymond about that a bit, and he was really kind of pressing that to try to hit that topic home, that in which it was not about designing with super expensive things. He thought that a beautiful design could be achieved by everyday materials.
And I think partly that's our fault in general, because we kind of worship these beautiful houses, you know, that are so luxurious and an ideal of some sort that many of us would like to, you know, live in.
Yeah.
But the inspiration of modern architecture was not that. It was to improve the life of the average person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that in general, the general public's idea of luxury, right? And I spoke with Raymond about this, or I think it was Barbara, but their general public's idea of luxury is these you know, ornate finishes and beautiful plumbing fixtures and things like this. And I know our office is definitely in alignment with this philosophy, but we think that the ultimate luxury is your proximity to nature, your connection to nature, right? So, you know, how does one space or how does one interior space connect with nature? If that connection is very strong, I would define that as luxurious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it improves the pleasure of daily life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's nothing more luxurious than that.
Well, great. I wanted to talk to you about your series on the Modernism Week's website, Desert Modernist. Can you kind of go in and give us a penny tour of what that program is about?
Yes. Palm Springs Modernism Week. I serve on the board of Modernism Week. Of course, it had to go online through the pandemic. So one of the videos that we are presenting is a series called Desert Modernists on these architects of Palm Springs that aficionados know all about, Frey and Kreisel and Wexler and Williams and others. But they aren't as well known in the general world, and the internet gives us a chance to really spread the knowledge about these important architects to online. So I'm doing this series called Desert Modernists, which are 12 or 15 minutes encapsulating each of those individual architects to just let the average person know about who they were, what their buildings look like, why are they important, basically. And the first three that are available right now are on an introduction to the whole series, and then one on William Cody and one on Albert Frey. And we'll continue into the future later this year and next year, focusing on the other architects. Now, that series is available right now as we sit on the Modernism, on the modernismweek.com website through the end of February 2021. But we will be bringing them back in the future to repeat the ones we've done and then to add new ones. So please, for your audience, keep a watch on the modernismweek.com website as these become available in the future.
Great. Yeah, for anybody who's semi-interested in watching that series, I would highly recommend it. It's a really good overview to kind of get your feet wet with the Desert Modernists. So Alan, thanks for coming in today. Can you give our listeners your website and then a way to contact you if they have any questions for you?
Yes, my website is alanhess.net. And also I'm on Facebook as well. That's probably the best way to keep up with my current activities with historic preservation projects or challenges that I'm involved with, or just interesting information I've discovered about modern architecture, Southern California architecture. I post that on Facebook.
Great. And then I know on your website you have some of your books and writings, articles on there, but I also on Amazon. Your books are available on there as well, correct?
Yes. My books that are still in print are available on Amazon. And the 20 of them cover Frank Lloyd Wright, my book on John Lautner, but also cities like Palm Springs and Las Vegas. And my first book, Googie, 50s Coffee Shop Architecture, about the coffee shops of Southern California for the car culture from the mid-century as well. Also, incidentally, inspired by Frank Lloyd Wright, and one of the first initial buildings was designed by John Lautner that we talked about.
Great. Well, thanks, Alan. I appreciate it again, and yeah, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Mitchell.
Okay, well, thanks for watching the episode. If you'd like to learn more, you can go ahead and visit us at www.rostarchitects.com. If you'd like to see other episodes of the podcast, go ahead and click right here to learn more. Thanks, guys.